Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your favorite host on Blog Talk, Annie the Radio Chick. Want to welcome everyone to our chat room, and our phone lines will be open. We have a special guest coming on today, and I'll bring our guest on shortly. His name is Tim Barton, and he and his family have founded Wall Builders, wallbuilders.com, and we're going to be discussing the attack and defense of Christmas, Christians, and the Constitution. But before we get into that, someone sent me this little item, and I thought I'd bring it to your attention. There is a website up, and it's for patriotic support for the families of deployed military. And I put a link up in the chat room. It's wishes.causes.com. It is a goal. They're trying to raise $5,000 to assist veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, not just from the first day they come home, but throughout the rest of their lives. So please click on that website I put up, and they're asking for a donation of only $10. So help support our military troops and our veterans, and click on wishes.causes.com up in the chat room. Now, for today's excitement, we have Mr. Tim Barton from wallbuilders.com. Good afternoon, Mr. Barton. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are you, Ann?
I'm doing fine. Wallbuilders.com was started by, I believe it was your father and your family. Tell us a little something about that.
Yeah, well, Wallbuilders is the ministry that I worked for. My dad started it back in 1988, and actually the name Wallbuilders comes from the book of Nehemiah, where Nehemiah felt called to go back and rebuild the physical walls of Jerusalem that had been torn down. And my dad really felt challenged years ago to help rebuild the spiritual walls, the spiritual fabric of our nation that's so come under attack. And so that's the kind of the concept of Wall Builders. And what we do is we look back at our original history. So many of our lost stories and heroes of our nation and really even of our faith that we just don't know anything about today. And so because we know so little of our history, we buy into so many attacks and so many lies in this generation that we're a godless nation and we have godless roots and godless beginnings and so many things, and we just don't know the truth. And so we are a ministry that works to tell a lot of the forgotten stories, really with an emphasis on our moral and religious heritage as a nation.
Yeah, all right. Now, there's a section on there that I found fascinating because growing up, I graduated during the bicentennial, so our Revolutionary War was something that I just relished. And you have a section in there, it's a black-robed regiment. And
yes.
And this I love, because this is something that people really do not pay attention to.
Yeah, the black-robed regiment is something that we really have enjoyed discovering and finding out. During the Revolution, actually, the black-robed regiment was specifically the pastors, but they were termed the black-robed regiment by the British. The British soldiers actually credited the pastors for the Revolution. They said, these are the guys that are stirring up everything. They're getting everybody fired up to come out and fight. And literally they said if it wasn't for the pastors that the American colonists would actually just be happy, ignorant British colonists. But the pastors were getting so involved. And this is what one of the things we're so challenged with today is pastors – would literally get up in their pulpit and they would say, church, this is what's going on in the culture, but this is what the Word of God says. And they would do that with what was going on with the king, with what was going on with officials. It really didn't matter. Whatever was going on in the culture, they were going to look and see what the Bible said. And so this Black Robe Regiment was the one stirring the people up. In fact, it was this Black Robe Regiment that it's been historically documented that all 27 grievances that were listed in the Declaration as the reasons that we want to separate from Great Britain, those 27 reasons, all 27 had been preached from American pulpits prior to 1763. So over a dozen years before the Revolution started, we had pastors addressing every single grievance we had with Great Britain from the pulpit saying, this is what the Bible says, and this is why we have a problem with what's going on. And so now, the Black Robe Regiment were a group of pastors that really just did an incredible job of getting the people engaged and involved in the culture.
That is absolutely true. There are several that were really instrumental in rabble-rousing, especially up in the New England area. Now, you and your father are both ordained ministers, correct?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Now, one thing I do find is that when you do approach some of the ministers in today's day and age, you start to mention anything political, and they just clam up. They don't want to talk
right.
any politics. Why is that?
Well, we've been so trained in this culture that the job of the pastor is dealing with what happens inside the walls of the church, and we've been which the irony, of course, is in Romans 12:2 when it says don't be conformed by the pattern of the world. Don't let the world tell you the way you're supposed to operate. But that's what we've done inside the church. The world has said, church, you deal with what's inside the church, but really you need to leave everything outside the church to the rest of the world. Your job is spiritual. Our job is kind of the world. But really, when you look at the Bible, God has called us to redeem not just mankind, but the culture. And when we have a nation like our nation where the vast majority, 8 out of every 10 people, claim some form of Christianity, we are living in a culture where really you should see Christianity thriving, but we've been so intimidated and bullied by so many lower voices and even governmental offices with even the IRS threatening that they're going to remove, you know, the 501c3 from churches and we're going to remove your exemptions. We've been so bullied and threatened by that pastors have really backed up, which, by the way, the IRS really is just kind of a paper tiger. They threaten a lot of things. But ultimately, the 501c3 status is something that's very protected as a church because that's the organization, the nature of what you are. And you have a lot more freedom than the IRS wants you to know, which is our ministry. We've done a lot of things to help actually get pastors involved and engaged. We have the Pulpit Freedom Initiative that we work with where we get pastors to get up on Pulpit Freedom Sunday, where we actually get them very specifically to talk about issues, very directly, candidates by name. And we've even had had them turned into the IRS. We did it ourselves and said, you know what, guys, you need to come look at this church. And the IRS, we turned them in. The IRS says, you know, we really don't want to deal with that. They're having the freedom to say whatever they want to say, but the IRS doesn't want to deal with it because they recognize we actually have the freedom to speak from the pulpit. But if that actually ever goes to court and they get caught in court and they lose that battle in court, then they won't be able to bully anybody else ever again. And so they would rather bully the people that are uninformed than lose this battle in court. But the IRS and government really has been working to kind of shut up this whole religious freedom and really Christianity even in our nation.
Well, I have a caller coming in, but I'm going to just ask the caller to hold on for a second because a lot of this I find fascinating because you have certain denominations that will refuse to completely speak anything political, either in the pulpit or even out of the pulpit.
Sure.
But then you have a whole other section, especially here in the Southern Black Baptist, where they will turn around at the pulpit and tell you, you will vote for this person.
Sure.
And so now you've got two diametric views of Christianity, but in the interim, you've got government that doesn't want you to have religion. Because if you have faith and a religion, you're going to hold that above government. They want to be above everything else. They want to be your God.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, they don't mind you having faith as long as it is subservient to what they want to do. And so, you know, the idea of faith is something that doesn't intimidate them as long as it fits in the category they want it to fit in. They just don't want that to really lead what you do in life. And so you're right. They really have tried to remove God so that we are inundated with this concept of there is this separation where not just a separation of church and state, but actually where you remove God from one area of your life or several areas of your life. And God really is just compartmentalized to a certain section where God fits in one box. And really there's a box for government and a box for education and politics. And God just doesn't really fit in those boxes.
Okay. Well, now I have the caller here, Thomas. Thomas, you're on the air with Tim Barton of Wall Builders. How are you today?
I am good. I wanted to get in here before I run off to take a final. Tim, first of all, I saw your dad's show that he did on Glenn Beck that was telling the true history of the true black history in America.
Yeah.
And I want to say I appreciate that, and my hat's off to you and your family for doing that, because, you know, as a conservative who's black, and one thing about me, I'm not politically correct or anything like that, so, you know, when talking to me, just refer to me as a black American, because I, you know, I'm tired of the hyphenated American, you know, that stuff. I'm black, and I'm proud of that. So having said that, you hit on something. Well, Annie, you hit on something very powerful. And I went off on this last night on my show in light of what happened with Herman Cain. And I pointed out the fact that the black pastors from the black churches and really Christian churches, for that matter, never came to the defense of Herman Cain. Herman Cain is a Christian. He's a associate pastor for the last 30-something years. No one in a body of Christ came to his defense. And that bothers me. And then more specifically in the black churches, you know, had this been an attack against the black Democratic candidate, You have your race pimps, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and all those folks, they would have been coming out of the woodworks like leeches. So how do you speak to that? I mean, I know it has to be frustrating to you when you see this. Could you share with me how you feel about that?
Absolutely. Anne, do you want to address this first? Or do you want me to run with it?
And I'm going to let you run with it.
Well, Thomas, thanks so much for your call and really appreciate your support. I think you're absolutely right. I think, first of all, the race card is something that's really been overused and misunderstood. And I understand in my position that's something that could cause a lot of offense for me to say. But there's just been such a misunderstanding in the black community where so many government officials have worked to pacify and please that community that they've pulled them on side, not understanding that the Democratic Party was not even the party of the blacks, so to speak. The Republican Party was actually started for the party of the blacks, and it was years and years and years later that it all shifted. But what you see is, in so much of the black community, that they are so concerned with the social justice issue, and we want people that are going to be concerned with social justice. And from practical appearance, it looks like the Democratic Party is the party that is more concerned with social justice issues. Now, the problem is, within social justice issues, the government is saying that we will deal with all social justice issues, and so many in the black community go, you know what, we want the government to take care of this. But it's one of these mindsets that we've forgotten. God never, ever called government to deal with social issues. And
that's
in fact,
right.
there's 219 verses in the New Testament that deal, well, really even in the Bible, that deal with social justice-related issues. But the only thing the Bible ever tells government is actually in their treatment of the poor. It says you're not supposed to mistreat them because they're poor. You give them a fair trial when they come to court. The other 218 verses are addressed to the individual or to the church, saying you need to deal with social justice. But we have so many people in the community that look and say, you know what, government can be our provider, government can do this, that they are willing to stand up and defend things because that's a value system to them that's so important that, you know, we care about social justice. And by the way, very much do I care about social justice. But when you look at the Bible, that really falls on the responsibility of the church and the community,
right,
not on government. And so I think so much of the misunderstanding has led to people being so supportive and so defending a party rather than a system of values, and really even understanding the biblical sense of those values, that it's not government that provides. And this is where I think that you see another one of the issues, is that we have so many people that are not wanting to be biblical as much as they are rather issue-based. When you look at Herman Cain, you mentioned that, you know, he's been associate pastor for 30 years. You have a guy that, from all practical outward appearances, seems like he's trying to be biblical, seems like he's trying to do a God-honoring thing, but we have people that are more concerned with an agenda than really maybe a biblical candidate, who Herman Cain certainly looks a lot more biblical than what we have in office right now. It
right.
certainly seems like he would do something a lot more God-honoring. But we have these, you know, we have these agendas that we're concerned with, you know, well, who's going to take care of me, who's going to do this and that. And we've begun to look to government instead of understanding, you know what, God's our provider, not government. God is the one who meets our needs, not government. And the Bible really gives pretty clear outlines of the way we're supposed to live and the way we're supposed to handle things. And we've really just become a rather unbiblical culture in the way we view government and even the church.
Right.
Can you speak on the silence of the because you hit the nail on the head, and when it comes to the social issues, and especially and I go back to the black church because I'm black, but one thing that I set back and I've observed, and that is this: the three major things that's affecting the black community, the destructive abortion rate,
mm-hmm.
the high rate of AIDS and homosexuality, the high dropout rates. There is silence in the black churches when it comes to those issues, but yet and still you have rates of, you know, adultery among the leadership. And I'm like, okay, why are we not talking about the fact that the black community's population growth is now negative population growth? Why are we so focused on saying stuff like, well, you can't judge me, I do what I want to do? I don't
Absolutely.
Understand that. Can you speak to that issue? Because those three issues right there has decimated the black community, as you know.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, one of the things you look at when you look at government giving people handouts, the problem with government giving somebody a handout is the more government does for them, the less they do for themselves. And the problem, as we know, obviously, if you catch a man a fish, you fed him for a day, but if you teach him how to fish, you fed him the rest of his life. And instead of us helping people understand, you know what, you need to learn how to fish. You need to learn how to be responsible. You need to learn how to do this. And instead of helping them get on their own two feet, government is saying, you know what, let us take care of you, let us do. And because government is so stepping in, that we are ultimately crippling an entire generation because government is trying to step in instead of letting them accept some responsibility and stand up on their own 2 feet and do some things, when ultimately you look at the black community, you're talking about some incredible giftings that God has given to people, and you could look at any community. We say black community, but you could look at any race, ethnic group you want to. God gives so many gifts to people, and people are so gifted, but the problem is we've so lowered the standard of expectation. And I've been a school teacher for 6 years, and I understand when whatever bar you set, people are going to reach whatever standard you have for them. And ultimately, if you set a really high bar, it might take them a while to get to that bar, but if you set the standard and you uphold the standard, you have that expectation and you follow through with it, they're ultimately going to meet that. But what we've seen in the black community is we've seen such a lowered bar where we just expect certain things instead of going, you know what, no, we expect the best from you. We expect that you've been gifted by God. God has equipped you. You are someone significant that God has a plan and purpose for. We've lowered a bar and said, you know what, that's just your quality of life. It's just what you were born into. You can't help it. Government's just going to have to meet your needs, and you're just going to have to get this paycheck. We've so lowered the bar that people have begun to meet it, and they've just accepted that quality of life. And so instead of going, you know what, I want to accomplish and do and become, they're really saying, all right, government, take care of me. And so you see that with government saying, you know what, we can help with this child control deal. We can help make your life easier. You don't need to accept responsibility. Dads, you don't need to stay faithful. You don't need to be committed. If you get pregnant, we'll help you, you know, solve this pregnancy issue. Government has stepped in to try to solve these problems instead of going, wait a second, you know what, God set up a system, and God's system always works. No matter what framework of mind you come from, God's way will work. Whether you're a believer or not, if you do it God's way, it will work. And so, you know what, if I keep God's idea of family, if a husband and wife or if man and woman get married and then have sex and then have a kid and they stay together and they're faithful, that's going to be a pretty strong structure instead of, you know, government offering a solution other than, you know what, why don't we give them some counseling to help their relationship learn how to be together and be a couple and let's get them married. And government's offering an abortion instead of maybe, you know, premarital or marital counseling. Well, maybe that would be a better solution to have a marriage instead of an abortion. But, well, again, we just have such a misunderstanding of even God's call on our life that we've lost so many of these sense of values.
Well, unfortunately, you make a lot of logical sense. But if we follow through with the logical sense, then we're going to not have big government and we're not going to have career politicians.
You know, that is the reality. And wouldn't that just be too bad?
Well, the point is to make everyone dependent upon government so that way they can keep on getting themselves voted in.
And that's the reality. You're right.
That is the unfortunate reality. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Yabelis. The chat room is open. Want to welcome everyone in there. And the call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. Please feel free to call in and ask your questions of Tim Burton of wallbuilders.com. Now, Tim, you said you're a teacher. What do you teach?
Well, actually, I was a teacher, a high school teacher for 6 years. I'm no longer a teacher. I work full-time now for Wall Builders, but I taught in a Christian school, and I actually taught the high school Bible classes, and I taught the senior government and economics.
Ah, all right. Now, I had put up in Facebook announcing that this show is on, and actually I had a lot of feedback in there, which surprised me. Normally I put an announcement up there and say people say, yeah, I'm going to stop in. But I have here Michelle Lynette writes, I vote on defending Christmas, Christian values, and the condition we need to keep Christ in Christmas and Christ in everything that looks like that went wrong with this world now, and prayer should be back in schools also. God bless you always, she writes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, one of the interesting things, Ann, that we've seen, when you look at so many of the issues that we are dealing with in our culture today, it's remarkable how almost without exception you can trace everything that we deal with all the way back to 1962 and 63 when we did remove the Bible and prayer from schools. You know, amazing things when you look back at where we came from to where we are today. When you remove God out of the equation, you're always going to have problems, because the reality is, even if you go back to where one of the big arguments that we hear is, well, wait a second, if we put God in schools, that means you're going to require everybody to be a Christian. Well, that's not the case, because the founding fathers, although the majority of them were Christians, a lot of them weren't Christians, but they believed so much that the ethics, the morals, the principles in Christianity are so good for a culture and for families and for people that they said, we need to teach kids the best ethics, principles, morals there are, and there's none better than those found in Christianity. And so when we look at a culture today that seems so immoral, that seems so unethical, so many major principle issues, why are they dealing with those? Well, when you remove the teachings of Christianity that teach you the ethics and the morals and the principles, well, where are they going to get that sense of value? Where are they going to establish their sense of morals? MTV, VH1, you know, well, what is it that's going to teach them right and wrong if it's not going to be the Word of God? And so the values of Christianity, it's not just that we want everyone to get saved, although I hope everyone does come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. The reality is, for our culture, there are no greater values and morals than those of Christianity, and that's why the founding fathers worked so hard to implement those values, is because they understood for us to be a successful nation, we have to have people that know how to make it successful. And if you have people that are unethical and don't have the values and morals they need, we will never be successful. And so they said, we're going to teach them those values and morals and principles, and that's by keeping Christ, the Word of God, in what we do. And so we can even say, with Christmas coming up, it's so important that we understand that Christmas is about Christ. And the reason it's important that we have that recognition is because of the values, the morals, the system of character that really introduces into our life, that we understand, you know what, I'm living for a higher calling, and so life is more than just about me. And that's where we can understand, you know what, at Christmas, we care about other people. We give to other people, and we give because God first gave to us. But so many of these things that are so important to us, we would have no concept of if we didn't understand the Word of God or God or the Bible, Christianity, whatever the case is. We have to understand that, but that's the reality of keeping God in what we do. And so she was right.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that, of course, our socialists in government here want to do is destroy our faith, to destroy our moral values, which they're doing bit by bit. Recently, I came across an article in Oakland, California. They were filming a rap video, and something went wrong with one of the musicians or whatever. So rather than, you know, replacing the string or repairing the equipment, you know, next thing you know, shots are being fired and 8 people are hit, including a 1-year-old child.
Wow.
When you consider that they think this is perfectly fine to do, that means our moral compass has absolutely hit rock bottom.
Sure.
And if one group were to do that, it would be deemed socially acceptable. But if another group in our society does it, it's abhorrent. So there's a double standard in society also.
There absolutely is a double standard. And the reason, obviously, that the double standard is there is because if there's not a double standard, then it's too easy of a victory for us. And so they have to have a double standard so that they can hold us responsible for things they wouldn't hold their own people responsible for, because otherwise how are they going to win the fight? If they fight a fair fight, they would never win. So they have to have a double standard so they can try to find a victory somewhere. And that's where you see people like Herman Cain having a smear campaign run against him with, you know, things. I don't know the validity of them. You know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But the reality is, if this would have happened to somebody on the other side, those attacks would not have been nearly what they were. In fact, they would have been reversed on the people that were trying to attack. But there is a double standard, because that's the only way they think they'll be able to win, is if they cheat. And the reality is, it's true. Because if we just looked at the truth, if you just saw the logic, you would go, oh, wait, that doesn't make any sense. In fact, the other side, that this is a side that's logical, that's truth, and that makes sense. We want to do that. And so that's why you see so much in the sense of a cover-up, and you don't see the truth, and you see this double-edged perspective that, well, we're going to show you one side but not the other in this double standard, because the reality is our side just makes way too much sense for them to fight fair.
Well, fair fight is not something that they're in, and we've seen that especially in the Obama administration and with his henchmen, David Axelrod and David Plouffe. Nothing's fair with that. We have Thomas back on. He'd like to ask you one more question. Thomas?
Actually, it was just it was more so of a comment. We talk about the double standards and we want to speak the truth and that sort of thing. But my personal feeling has been for a while, and as someone who also I'm also a minister, which I don't tell a lot of people that, but I am, and I really believe that it's time for us to really model how Jesus dealt with the religious folks in the Bible. He wasn't nice. He spoke the truth, but when he needed to be brutally honest, he was brutally honest. Because, Tim, honestly, and tell me if you agree with this, in that we're not just fighting a battle for our country, but we're fighting a battle for a spiritual battle. This isn't just, it's not just a natural battle. And a lot of times, even a lot of Christians, they look at it as, okay, well, our economy and this, that, and the other. But if you trace Barack Obama's lineage back, you know, to his following of Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals and all that stuff, Saul Alinsky was associated with Anton LaVey, who in turn was the author of the Satanic Bible and the founder of the Church of Satan. So therefore, we have to look at this in two realms. We have to look at it in terms of what's going on in Washington, and also we as believers, we need to be able to see the evil that is at work trying to destroy our nation. Would you agree with that?
Thomas, I think there's no doubt there's definitely a battle going on, and definitely more than just meets the eye, you're right. And the reality is when you look at what's at stake, and it's not just our nation, but it's an entire generation, it's an entire culture. You know, you're talking about millions upon millions of young people that are growing up, and they're going to grow up either with this idea that, you know what, there is a God, there is a higher being that we are accountable to, and one day you stand before him, and your only hope is through his son, Jesus Christ. There's either this option, or there's this perspective we're being taught now that life is all about you, and it's humanist or socialist or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But the reality is we're fighting a battle for this next generation, for their minds and their hearts. And so it is much more than just our national stability, what's going on in our nation. It is really for the souls of this next generation. And so you're right. The battle we're fighting is much more than just who we're going to elect in this next election. The reality is we are battling for the souls, and that's why it's so important for us to get engaged in the culture, because the culture does more training and more mind shaping than anything else in these young people's lives. And so if we can't work to redeem the culture, if we can't get the culture turned around, we're going to have a really hard time reaching the hearts of these young people.
Well, this is why it's so important when you see someone out on a major sport, someone like Tim Tebow. He's being vilified by the media, but that's backfiring on them. You know, more and more people are seeing professional players in the quality of Tim Tebow, willing to turn around and wear their faith on their sleeve. And for that reason, I think our country is starting to make that turn. Organizations like your father's and that you're working with are now popping up more and more. They're more prevalent. And I was surprised you were around since 1988. That was the start of the home computers. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love Tim Tebow, and so I would love to sit and talk about him. But you know, the reality is that we are seeing a lot of hope and a lot of success in this generation, where you have people in professional sports like the Tim Tebows. But you know, we can go across the board, and we can point to people in all different areas and avenues that are standing up for their faith, just like the Bible has instructed that we need to, that, you know, we don't keep our faith internalized, that we're a city set on a hill, that we're not to be hidden, but we're supposed to be visible, that people can see us and know. And the reality is, people like Tim Tebow are living a life that people can look at and go, man, I want to emulate. I want to have and something be a part of that. And so that's the reality of being the light of the world, where people look, and it's not – they're not turned off by what they see. They're inspired by what they see, and that's how we're the light of the world. But I see a lot of hope for this generation, and I think that's where we can look back to Numbers, where as the Israelites were getting ready to go into Canaan, and they chose a leader from each of the 12 tribes, and we call them the 12 spies, but really they were 12 leaders that were chosen to go in and spy out the land. You know, when they came back, there were all 12 of them had the same report. You know, 10 of them said, you know, the food is incredible, the fruits and everything we've seen, it's amazing. The problem is there's these giants in the land. And then you had Joshua and Caleb who came back and said, you know what, they're right. The fruit was incredible, and there are giants in the land. But Joshua and Caleb had this little phrase at the end. They said, but God. You know, that there is a God who's on our side. God has called us to do this. God always equips the people he calls. God is going to be with us as we go and do what God has called us to do. We're not alone. And I think we are in that generation where we really have to have the Joshua and Caleb mindset, because the reality is there are giants in the land, but God. And so we can have hope knowing that, you know what, there's a lot of battles we're going to have to face, but we have a God who is so big that we're not doing this alone, and we serve a God who parted the Red Sea. We serve a God who took, you know, a few fish and bread and fed 5,000 men plus the women and children. I mean, we serve a God who has done some pretty miraculous things, and that same God is on our side, and so we don't have to be discouraged and think, man, there's no hope for our nation. There's no hope for this next generation. We look and go, you know what, God, you can use me. I submit myself to you, and I want to be a part of what you're going to do. And so we get involved, and God uses us to help redeem and change this culture, just like you see people like Tim Tebow that are changing the entire face of the NFL, and God has used his faith as well as the giftings he's given him to do that. And that's what we can do in whatever area and avenue we're in.
All right. I want to get into some of the issues that your organization goes after, and one of them is the attack on Christmas. And
yes.
I went looking for some news articles, and I just keyed in, you know, Christmas band. And oddly enough, I came up with an article from St. Petersburg Times, and believe it or not, the date of this is December 8th, 1947. So the attack on Christmas is not something new. And this was about a school district, actually all 23 Brooklyn public schools in New York. The superintendent had banned any religious indication of Christmas. No Christmas songs, no religious Christmas decorations. Everything had to be secular. So back in 1947,
yep.
Government was trying to take, you know, Christ out of Christmas.
Yeah, and we've, you know, through history, we've seen those attacks. In fact, the removal of God, you can go all the way back to the founding fathers, where there were people fighting to get God out of anything we did. And so Christmas was definitely part of it. Interesting, though, when you look at Christmas, it actually was even a battle in the founding of our nation, because in Europe, Christmas was a festival that was done with the high church. And so in high churches, the Anglicans, the Episcopals, the Catholics, it was very much a traditional thing they did. And so when we came to America, there were people that came from the high church kind of background, the Anglicans, Episcopals, Catholics, what have you. But when they came, they wanted to celebrate Christmas. But then you have some of the, you know, the Puritans and some of the separatists that came to America, and they didn't want to really have anything to do with the high church. And so the Christmas festival was something they, you know, they believed in Christ and they believed in Jesus, but they weren't going to celebrate this festival because it was associated with the high church. And so when we came to America, the high church, for the most part, settled in the southern part of the colonies, and the low church, the Quakers, the Baptists, the Congregationalists, they tended to settle in the northern part of the colonies. And so you even saw a dividing line with just a festival of Christmas. And again, it had nothing to do with the birth of Christ or recognizing God or even the expression of a religious thing, but it was more of the high church. But you see, as our nation began to develop, you had people even like George Washington. When he was president in 1795, he was the first president to have a Christmas party and a Christmas festival. He actually hosted it at Mount Vernon for the members of Congress. And we can look all throughout our presidents that have acknowledged Christmas, that have done Christmas speeches. In fact, there's a lot of people that have done some pretty incredible Christmas speeches. Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, a lot of people that did a lot of things wanting to celebrate Christmas and recognizing the significance of Christ to our nation. In fact, there's a website, the American Presidency Project, that people can check out, and they can go look up a lot of these Christmas speeches. Franklin Roosevelt did one in 1935. That's really good. Harry Truman did a couple, one in 1949, one in 1952. Ronald Reagan did some. But we have presidents that we can go through almost without exception that celebrated Christmas, because even though there were people that are working to remove Christ, they, our presidents, and really so many of our leaders understood that Christ was such an important part of our nation, where even today we have almost 80% of the nation that claim some form of Christianity. We understood Christ is such an important part. This is just kind of the structure of our nation. It's who we are and it's what we do. But it hasn't stopped, you know, these little chihuahuas from trying to nip at the heels, saying, wait a second, we don't want Christianity. And so we've seen those attacks for years and years and years. But our founding fathers are the ones who actually, George Washington, the first president of our United States, has a Christmas party, and we're going to celebrate because they understood the significance of Christ. And really, when you look at Christ and Christmas, it goes back to the founding fathers saying, we want God to be a part of everything we do. And so for a lot of the founding fathers, the festival wasn't something they celebrated. However, it had nothing to do with their belief in Christ or their belief in God being a part of what they did, where, you know, the founding fathers are the ones that worked to put the Bible in schools, that worked to help kids know those standards of ethics and morality, to know about Jesus Christ. In fact, John Quincy Adams, in 1837, on the 4th of July, he was delivering an oration before the town of Newbury, and he said, in a chain of human events, the birthday of the nation is indissolubly linked with the birthday of the Savior. The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity. So John Quincy Adams says that our nation being able to be birthed is directly linked to the birthday of our Savior. So what Christmas is for Christians, that's the 4th of July for America, even John Quincy Adams is saying, I mean, Christmas is such a big deal for our nation. It's as important for our nation as the 4th of July is to our nation. I mean, these are really the two big holidays we should, as Americans, we all should celebrate Christmas, and we all should celebrate the 4th of July, because that's the significance of what it is. And so these attacks on Christmas, on Christianity, really aren't new, but it's something that really it should not be successful in the light of who we are and where we came from, especially as a nation that's worked so hard to promote religious freedom. And it has nothing to do with government endorsing a religion, because in our nation we accept people from all faiths. We accept people from all religions, which is one of the teachings of Christianity, is that we don't persecute, we don't kill people from another faith. Now, we work to witness to them. We work to tell them the truth about the gospel of Christ, about standing before God one day in judgment, and Jesus is your only hope of salvation. And we work to teach them that. But in America, you don't have the persecution that you do in other nations, because that's what Christianity teaches. And we have so many people that enjoy the benefits of Christianity but have no idea that the reason they enjoy the freedoms they do is because it's what Christianity teaches.
Well, wouldn't you say then in this case it would be a reverse persecution? It is the suppression of us I'm trying to think of the proper word. We have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion.
Exactly.
So if I were to walk into a school wearing a crucifix, I should not be persecuted. A lot of schools now are telling kids you can't wear any religious emblem.
You know, you're exactly right. And the sad thing is, we have so few people that understand the Constitution, understand their freedoms, or even the First Amendment. The First Amendment, it simply says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. But what it says is Congress can make no law that favors one religion above another, or Congress can't prohibit the free exercise of religion. That's all it says about Congress or government and religion. And the reason they did that is because when they came from Europe, when they came from England, England has had an established religion. They had a national religion, which was, at the time, Anglican. And it's because the king was Anglican. But whatever the king was, he could make all the people be. If he was Catholic, he could make all the people be Catholic. Whatever he was, he would make the people be. And they said, you know, we don't want to let someone, like a king, tell us what denomination we have to be. In fact, we don't want the king to tell us, because we're not of this denomination, we can't worship God. That was the whole idea of the Puritans and the Separatists, is they wanted the freedom to worship how they wanted to worship without having the king tell them. That's what you see in the First Amendment, which has nothing to do with the separation of church and state, which is totally misunderstood today, because that came from a letter from Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, when he was first president, he had a group of Baptists from Danbury, Connecticut, that wrote him a letter in 1801. And when they wrote him this letter on October of 1801, he gets this letter. He responds to them on January 1st of 1802 as the president. And these Danbury Baptists, when they wrote him a letter, they said, "President Jefferson, we're really concerned that in America we're going to have what we had over in Great Britain, that government's going to come in, government's going to tell us what we have to do and how we have to do it. And we're really concerned, as these Baptists up in Danbury, Connecticut, we're concerned that we're going to lose our religious freedom." Well, Thomas Jefferson writes them a letter back, and he says, "You guys don't need to be worried about losing your religious freedom." He says, "Those are freedoms God has given you, and government can't take them away." He says, "In fact, there's a wall of separation between the church and the state." Now, when Thomas Jefferson said that, he was saying the wall between church and state is to protect the church from the state, that the state government can't come in and tell us what we can and can't do and who we can and can't worship. Well, the reason is because where they came from, that's what government had done. And they said, "We don't want that in America." But the reality is, we've forgotten so much of our history, or we've never been taught our history, that we don't know that's the reason we have set up what we have set up, or that that's what it means. And so today we have government coming in and saying, "Wait a second, separation of church and state," which, first of all, people don't even know what that phrase means anymore. Which, and by the way, I can go back and say, you actually can go back to the Protestant Reformation, the group of about 30 Catholic monks that got together and said, "We're not living biblically, we need to be more biblical." And these guys, the ones that carried out the Reformation, they're the ones that came up with the idea of the separation of church and state, because they had just come through the Dark Ages. And the Dark Ages is when the king was running, the state was running religion, and everything was done in one institution. And so many atrocities were happening in the name of Christianity. And these monks said, "Wait a second, there's a problem, because we have one person running the government and one person running religion. There's not supposed to be that. There's supposed to be a separation between those two things." And they pointed to the Bible, because they said God raised up Moses and God raised up Aaron. There were two different leaders of two different things, and it had nothing to do with the removal of God from government, or the removal of, you know, people in the church from government. It had to do with understanding there's two separate institutions. God's still over all of it, but you have different leaders because of the atrocities they saw during the Dark Ages. Well, we follow through with that up to Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson carries up the same thought and says, "Wait a second, government can't tell the church what they're supposed to do. Those are freedoms God has given you." But today we've lost so much of the perspective of, well, this is the reason we do what we do. This is the reason the First Amendment was written. It's because they came from Europe, and this is what was going on in Europe. And so we came to America. They wanted to make sure that these freedoms were protected. We have no concept of what that is. And so today, you're right, kids in school are persecuted, and they're told, you know what, you can't pray at football games, you can't pray at high school graduation, you can't have a Bible study, you can't even bring your Bible to school, you can't wear a cross, you can't have a Christian T-shirt, all of these things, because they say, well, it's really the separation of church and state. That has nothing to do with the separation of church and state. But we don't have that perspective anymore, because we don't know our history.
Well, what people leave out of that First Amendment when they battle us on this is they're prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There's
they
nothing
sure are.
Says on there whether or not you can exercise your First Amendment right on or off government property. It doesn't specify it can only be on private property. But if government prohibits the free exercise, then they are violating the First Amendment in any shape and form. So there was a girl that was suspended from school for bringing her Bible to school and reading it during lunch.
Yeah.
We have Mary in the chat room, wants to ask a question, wants me to ask you about Washington slaves. She says, "Everyone keeps saying that Washington had slaves, so he believed in slavery."
You know, one of the interesting things about our founding fathers, when we first came to America, the majority of people that came to America actually were abolitionists. They wanted to abolish slavery. In fact, when we first came to America, a lot of the colonies we set up actually abolished slavery in those colonies. Well, the king over in England finds out about it. King George finds out about it. And he says, "You know what? You guys, you can't abolish slavery, because you are English colonists, that's an English colony, and in England we have slaves, and so you will have to have slaves. We're not going to let you abolish them. And so a lot of founding fathers tried to abolish slavery. In fact, you have people like Dr. Benjamin Franklin and Dr. Benjamin Rush, who were signers of the Declaration, who joined specifically and explicitly said that the reason I'm joining is because we want to end slavery. And the king says, as long as we're British colonists, we can't end slavery. So we're joining this American Revolution. We're joining this fight because we don't want to have slaves anymore, which is interesting because George Washington, when he was alive, he did have slaves, which actually were a lot closer to indentured servants because he paid all of his slaves. He gave them rooms, he gave them houses, he fed them, and he paid them. So it was really a lot closer to an indentured servant. But upon his death, he freed every single one of them, and he put money in their pockets. And so that's not generally the perspective we have of a slave owner, but we just know so little of our history. In fact, if we look back to our founding fathers, there were 56 signers of the Declaration, and I would challenge any listener to come up with more than five of those 56 signers who even owned slaves, because we're told today, well, they were all slave owners. You know, they were atheists, they were agnostics, they were racist, they were bigots, they were all these things. But the reality is we only know of one or two that had slaves or that maybe were an atheist or agnostic or deist, and then all the rest of them are painted in that light saying, well, they were all like that, not understanding, well, the reality is a lot of these guys were very opposed to a lot of these things that we're talking about today. We just don't know our history anymore.
And unfortunately, that's not what's being taught in school. It's amazing how dumbed down our education system is treating our children today. It's one of the reasons why I feel government should not even be in the classroom at all. That should be brought from the federal level back all the way down to the local level. So what a Texas town may want to teach their children may be different than what we want to do here in South Carolina or where you are out in the Midwest. Each community has its own special needs.
Yeah. Hey, Ann. Hey, mm-hmm. I actually have to run. I have something else. I actually backed up to this, so I'm sorry I got to leave you a little early, but I hope that some of this helps some of the listeners and maybe answered some questions some people have.
Oh, thank you so very much. You, Tim, I welcome you back anytime. It has been a great pleasure. I'm just fascinated just sitting here listening to you because I've got a ton more things on here I was going to go over with you, but I would like you to have come back on again.
We'd love to do it sometime.
Thank you so very much.
Well, thanks so much. God bless you and have a Merry Christmas.
You too, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. This was Tim Burton from wallbuilders.com. His father formed wallbuilders.com, and Tim was gracious enough to come on as our guest, and hopefully we'll have him back on again. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis, and the call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. I want to welcome everyone to the chat room, too, so please give a call in. And unfortunately, I'm missing my co-host today. I don't know where he went. He's MIA. Hopefully he'll wake up from his nap and call in. One of the things I did want to ask Tim about, and I came across this clip. This was in U.S. News just recently. I believe it was just today. This played up today. I'm going to play this clip and see if anyone wants to call in and comment on it.
The skeleton dressed in a Santa suit and nailed to a cross was set up on the courthouse lawn in Leesburg. It's one of nine approved displays this Christmas season, and it's stirring up controversy.
I think it's just extremely, extremely sad that there's somebody in this county who would try to basically debase Christmas like this. This really crossed the line.
The display was built and erected by a mother and son from Middleburg. Friends say they are associated with an atheist group. Earlier in the day, the skeleton was dismantled by a woman who thought the display was offensive, but some consider it art.
The message to me, at least, is that the meaning of Christmas, which is about faith and family, is dead and has been replaced by commercialism.
Some residents came by to see the skull and bones in the red velvet suit, only to find it on the ground.
What do you think of a Santa on a cross here at your courthouse?
I'm torn. I also believe in freedom of speech.
That controversial display is no longer here on the courthouse lawn. The woman and her son who built it took it away because it had been vandalized. At a Loudoun County Board of Supervisors meeting, there were strong opinions for and against the Skeleton Santa.
The display is provocative, but in the United States of America, under our Constitution, provocative is protected.
I have one word to describe what I felt this morning when I passed the courthouse square here in Leesburg, and that word is obscene. Instead of maybe having a conversation in a public square, what we're seeing is vandalism.
Some are suggesting the best way to handle the controversy is for the county to ban displays at the courthouse altogether. Darcy Spencer, News 4.
Well, typical. Government finds there's a controversy, and what they do, they ban everyone across the board. Typical. You know, I do not agree in this display. I do agree that this person has the constitutional right to express their opinion. It is freedom of speech, but with freedom of speech also comes responsibility. You know, you have the right to say whatever you choose, but be ready to stand up and defend what you are saying. And obviously, I don't think this mother's raising her child very well if she wants to allow a morally reprehensible display to be put up. She shows absolutely no, no empathy for anyone that is religious. You know, it is a deliberate and absolute slap in the face, and that's what she's done. She and her son have absolutely slapped Christianity and Christmas in the face. So if someone turns around and decides to vandalize the display, well, I don't encourage criminal behavior. I'm sure there's other ways that they could have protested display. And I question also the town council that allowed this display to be placed, knowing full well it was going to be completely insulting to a large swath of people. Well, you're listening here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is open, and I do welcome you to call. It's 917-889-3675. And in the interim, I'm going to take a short break, and I'm going to be playing a song by Anthony Tedesco, and it's called Soulless Pariah. That was Anthony Tedesco from his album Exordium, Solus Pariah. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. We've been talking earlier. We were talking to Tim Barton of Wall Builders about attack on Christmas, Christianity, and the Constitution. And I came across a bunch of articles last Friday in Fort Worth, Texas. The school district there decided to completely ban any Christmas celebrations, including visits from Santa Claus. They were no longer going to be allowed during the school day. Now, here you got a bunch of little kids. Come on. Why do you have to destroy Christmas for them? Why can't they have Santa Claus? You know, they are also banned exchanging Christmas gifts. They will not endorse or sponsor any religious activity or doctrine. But why are they going to prohibit anyone else from expressing it? You know, the school district isn't there to teach religion, and that's not what the school district is doing. So why are you going to allow people to be prohibited in their free expression of their religion? This is political correctness going completely amok. And, you know, one way to ruin a kid's holiday, you know, you're taking it out on the little kids. What better way to hurt the parents, right? Leave the kids going home crying. Oh, no, we can't exchange Christmas cards or Christmas gifts, and Santa's not going to come to school because the big bad person in the school district said, no, we can't have it. And talking about big bad people, Governor Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island has been taking a big hit. He's upset because he's received, as of yesterday, over 3,600 calls protesting his, quote, holiday, unquote, tree. Not a Christmas tree. They put up a holiday tree. And now Lincoln Chafee is a little upset because his phone has been running off the hook. And out of the 3,600 telephone calls protesting, all but 700 were from out of state. 92 callers supported Chafee. A whole 92 people actually supported a holiday tree. You know, I'm tired of hearing holiday trees. If I see something up there and it says a holiday display, I'm walking away. As a matter of fact, my husband and I have to go out and pick out our Christmas tree. And there's one place we go to, and that's because it's called the Christmas Tree Farm. So if you see anyone supporting holiday sales, go into the store manager and say, you change that to Christmas and I'll come in and buy something. You leave holiday up there, I'm not going to come in and I'm not going to buy anything. I'm going to tell my friends and family not to come in or buy anything. And Mary writes, perhaps parents should tell the children about the greatest gift of all. Yes, maybe that is a very good idea. Maybe parents should start teaching their children moral values. And that's what's missing. Moral values are not being taught. They have to be taught first in the home. It's not up to government to teach morals. It's up to the family. And the breakdown in the family is exactly what the socialist communist agenda wants. They break down the family, they can now control you. So what do they do to break down the family? They make it profitable for these welfare moms to pop out kids. So the more kids they get, the more money they get. They make it profitable for these welfare moms to not be married. If they are married, they get penalized. They don't get as much money. Now, I had a clip, and I can't seem to find it. I don't think I uploaded it. But there's this woman in the Tampa area, Florida, and she's got 15 kids. 15. True story. She's on welfare, and she's got 15 kids. Now, the news story broke when she was evicted from her home. She wasn't paying her own rent. She wasn't working at all. She was living completely on welfare and assistance from the state for the kids. And what was happening is the rent wasn't being paid. So after a while, she was complaining she didn't have food, so all these charities were giving her food. Well, what happened to her welfare food stamps? I don't know. Probably had a ton of them. She's got 15 kids from three different daddies. She's not married. And after the while, the landlord says, you know, I can't have her living here for free. You know, I do have to pay the mortgage. I've got to pay the homeowner's insurance. I've got to pay the taxes. You know, I'm not her personal charity. So she evicted the woman, evicted her legally. So the state turns around and puts her and the 15 kids into a hotel room. Okay? The state is still paying her her welfare, still giving her her food stamps, still giving her a Medicaid. So she should have food, clothing, everything for the kids. They gave her a place to stay. All right, it's a hotel room. You don't want 15 kids running around in one hotel room. So they turned around, and they found another place, and they put them between two rooms, pending finding good housing for them. That's not good enough. She goes on air on the news station, and she says, someone has to pay for all my babies. Someone has to pay for my pain and suffering. Well, I don't think the taxpayer asked her to have 15 kids. I don't think it is the responsibility of the taxpayer for this woman who will not work, who's got three different daddies for her baby, and her fiancé, oh, by the way, is in jail doing time. Real model citizen, it appears. Well, it backfired on her. It backfired because when she went before the family court judge about getting more assistance and a better place to live, the family court judge turns around and says, listen, sweetie, I've heard rumors that you've been with another man while your fiancé is in jail, and you were with this other man in front of your kids. Do you happen to be pregnant? Well, the woman refused to answer whether or not she was pregnant. So the judge did something smart. She jailed her for contempt of court. Now, the children are placed in this children's home, and actually, so the picture of the children's home is pretty well nice, really nice. And she turns around, comes back in front of the courtroom a couple of days later, apologizes to the judge. Judge, no, I'm not pregnant. Well, they find, like I said, all the kids now in this home. She's living, you know, courtesy of the state in another hotel room somewhere. They found a place to put all the kids, a nice home and everything. Well, she and her sister now get into a pissing contest with the Children's Services. They get into a shouting match, and obviously the child service people, child protection or whatever you want to call it in Florida, felt threatened enough to call police. Well, consequently, her three youngest now have become wards of the state. Aha! It gets even better. They are now going to be investigating her for welfare fraud and everything else. She's lost complete custody of all of her children, all 15 now. Hey, you wanted us to be responsible for your kids? Yep. All 15 kids now are going to go into foster homes or be adopted, and Mama's not going to have any contact with them. Oh, but she's such a good mother, but the last time the state took the kids away from them, she didn't visit them once over a 10-month period. That's a real good mom. And it looks like my co-host finally woke up from his nap. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Oh, he's been around. I've just been swamped at work. Just wouldn't you know, at like about 1:45, we just get absolutely slammed. So finally lost. Sorry to be late, but good to be here. You know, this is such a funny story. It's almost so funny that it makes you want to cry. Because no. I mean, let's say after 5 kids, and then 6. And 7 and 8 and 9. I'm a person who believes in the Constitution, and I don't believe government should be involved in people's living rooms. But basically, when they're just milking we the people for, I mean, this is, oh my God, this story is exactly a poster child type story. I don't even know how to. did you see her? Did you see that on television? I think it was Fox or CNN. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I saw it on the television, and I saw the follow-up stories afterwards. And, you know, the first time I saw it, she's pointing the kids, and she says, someone has to be responsible for all these children, and someone has to be responsible for my pain and my fiancé's pain and suffering.
She was in a hotel, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
When she said that. She
right.
was in a hotel.
Right. Now, what is
she defrauded teaching? The innkeeper.
What is she teaching these 15 kids? What sort of responsibility and moral value is she teaching these kids? Hey,
well,
you know what?
She doesn't have to.
you can be wards of the state, and the state will pay for your food, your clothing, your housing. You don't have to work a single day. Just refuse to. Tell them that they're responsible for your life.
And there's a perfect example of how we as in society have failed miserably, and not the individual who is a responsible parent, et cetera, et cetera. My whole point is we have failed as a society to make it very challenging in order to become dependent on the state. We have made it almost so simple that you or I right now could actually quit our jobs or just not work at all and go file. And we've also made it easy to defraud, such as lying about financial status or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, I just blew my cork when she made that comment about, you know, we got to take care of her, whatever you just said. I mean, I thought to myself, honestly, if I didn't have an expensive TV, I would put a rock through it. And, you know, then she says she's got to go. She's got another interview. Oh, jeez. Kiss my booty. Jeez.
No, and then they turn around and they ask her brother and her sister whether or not they will take some of the children, just to keep the children in the family. Well, something happened between her brother and her, and he said he went from going, yes, I'll take them, to no. Basically, he said, I've put up with her crap, and I'm not going to deal with it anymore. These are her kids. They're her responsibility. Even her own brother turned around and turned his back on her.
Well, I think we've all experienced individual family challenges, et cetera, and all the other good things. But, I mean, for heaven's sakes, I mean, at what point in time, oh, my goodness, I mean, how did we let it get to this? I mean, and all of a sudden, she's a media star. The one, that TV show where they play the music, is this lady a victim of government? Ding! What? I certainly didn't get her knocked up 15, 16 times.
All I have to say, that must have been one durable paper bag.
God, oh, here we go. Here we go. Oh, boy. Oh, my goodness. But how is it, you know, how is it, times have been tough in this country for on and off. We're obviously a republic, and we have free enterprise, so sometimes the market's very good, and sometimes we struggle. But, I mean, people for years and years have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, have struggled, have done certain things just to get by. Businesses do certain things to meet their payroll, their responsibilities. Here we got the exact opposite. And, you know, it's just sickening where I was, Annie, I saw the story yesterday, and then I saw it again today. And due to the fact I don't want to acknowledge to people exactly where I work, but surrounded by extreme liberal people who were just like, isn't that just horrible? They just run her over, grab the kids, what's the world coming to? I'm thinking, this isn't you or I. We got Homeland busting our door down, for God's sakes. And then for her to have the audacity to say, well, I got to go now. The Daily News is here for an interview, or the Tribune, or whatever it was. Oh, just kiss my butt. Oh, my goodness.
No, what I loved also is that here she's getting all these services from the state and the county or whatever. You know, she's getting money for the kids. She's getting food stamps. She's getting welfare. Guaranteed somewhere along the way she's got unemployment. She's getting supplemental for her housing. Over here we call it Section 8. And she's getting stuff from local charities. Because of these news programs, people were coming over, giving her food and clothing. So she's getting everything completely 100% free.
Oh, must be nice. Must be nice. I would love to be able to be like that and just talk on Blog Talk Radio all day. It'd be a great life. But, I mean, especially when she says it with such conviction that we are responsible for her family, for the children. Where in the hell are the the dads around this joint. Man, oh, man.
Well, one of them was sitting in jail.
You bet that there's several of them sitting in jail.
Probably all of them. They got their own little club going on over there, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, let's say lay up some hoops over there on the court, you know?
Well, I'm sure when you were in New York, you saw, I don't want to say similar cases, but you've seen where parents just have multiple children, and the parent themselves has absolutely no responsibility. Just very irresponsible, and you need to... You know, children, right at birth, are almost like little puppies. And, you know, you coach them and you teach them and et cetera, et cetera. And children are not dumb. You think, well, kids are stupid. They pick up things fast. They see things. They remember things. And when you have this kind of lifestyle where an individual, basically, Annie, is doing nothing, and they're watching how good I don't want to say how good she's living, because obviously Section 8 isn't the best. But, I mean, you see that they're doing this type of living like this. All you're doing is training that person to do the exact same thing, and maybe even better at manipulating from the charities to the government agencies, on and on and on. And, I mean, that's basically, of those kids, you probably have at least half of them that in some ways will be following in her footsteps.
That's a very good possibility, and especially when government now promotes where you're not married. They do not promote a family unit at all. You've got the new jobs bill that Obama keeps pushing. It promotes you being single. You get better benefits if you remain single, not married. As soon as you get married, you have a penalty. The IRS does the same thing. As soon as you become married, you have a penalty. And we see this over and over and over again. In welfare, you get less money if the two of you are married to each other. So everything they can do to break down and break apart the family unit, they're going to do. And once they completely do that throughout all of our society, now they control every last one of them. They control every last one of us. Because who else are we going to turn to look for guidance, protection, whatever? We're going to look towards the government. And when we look towards the government, that means we're going to keep on putting in the same career politicians in office so we can keep our benefits, our protection, and our guidance. And they make it a dependent society. That's it. A complete nanny state is all they want.
Yep, well, that's exactly true. And the big problem is we as a society continue to complain and bitch about it on television and on radio. But what are we really doing to actually change the laws? Our politicians talk tough, but in many, many ways, none of them do anything simply because they profiteer from this. It is best for them to have the laws that currently stand on the land and not change it for more fiscal responsibility. How many times is someone's running for office? They're tough. We're going to get tough on this, tough on that, tough on this. Once they run for reelection and we talk about all the things they were going to get tough on, it's always, well, you know, yeah, of course, we do know.
Well, that's why something like Wall Builders is an excellent, excellent group. And unfortunately, you missed the interview with Tim Barton. He had to leave early. But what he's doing is trying to bring moral issues back into the forefront, bring faith back into people's lives. If people turn around and depend more upon their family and their faith, we depend less upon government. And the less we depend upon government, the less government's going to be intrusive in our lives. And that's one of the reasons why the government is trying to break down on the churches. They have this new thing now, small churches that broadcast over TV, you know, these little churches that do their Sunday services over TV. They're now mandating that they have closed captions. Now, that costs a lot of money to host that equipment for closed captioning. A lot of these small churches can't do that, which means now they cannot minister to the people that are shut in at home. Now you break down the church. They're also trying to get the IRS. If you turn around and talk politics on the pulpit, IRS says, you're going to lose your 501c. What better way to break down the people is to break down their faith and family?
Well, I think the Clinton administration proved it perfectly is that you lose your 501c depending on what kind of politics you talk from the pulpit. Certain politics can get away with whatever, and some cannot.
Oh, you mean so, like Reverend Wright?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Clinton administration, I forgot what university it is that they came along and took away their tax exempt status, which was clear. I think it was Oral Roberts University. It was obviously bigotry based on politics, because you would not see you would not see that taking place at some depending on what some individuals are talking about. And yes, Reverend Wright is one of them, but many, many others. And I mean, it's really, really sad on how we have just allowed all of this. You know, we talked. We had that great guest who's running for U.S. Senate in Maine, and I think it's so true how he said, you know, the fat cats at the country club who are running, they get all the media and they can buy all the, their commercials are glamorous and they're very cool, and yet a person like us, we can't really afford all that glitter and glamour. So it just goes to show is how we as taxpayers need to see through all that stuff. You see these politicians waving the American flags and yeah, this and that and this and that, and they're far from anything that is America.
Well, you know, as we were saying, the attack on the Christianity, this is recently up. This was just up this last week. Four Christian groups at Vanderbilt University are under a serious threat from the legal and cultural climate and may be soon booted from the campus because of a new university policy that says they must accept anyone and everyone into their organization. Now, it's funny, they do this against Christian groups, but do they do this against Muslim groups? You don't see that in the news. You don't see that anywhere, where Muslims must include Jews and Christians. But Christians have to accept anyone and everyone. Well, hello? It's called Christian for a reason. It's my religion. And if the university or any other government agency insists that I have to accept someone into my faith that is going to be completely opposite of my faith and violate my beliefs and the beliefs of my religion, then isn't government then prohibiting the free exercise thereof of my religion and establishing a definition of my religion?
Absolutely they are. Not only that, is that in many, many ways they're actually telling you who you cannot, they're basically saying who you can't reject into your group. I mean, isn't government about that? Don't they pick and choose who they let into their little groups and country clubs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Of course they do. And the bottom line is that, I mean, government just seems to be getting away with not only a double standard but almost a quadruple standard, to whereas they really are not only just violating the Constitution, they're outright rewriting their own type of Constitution month by month, because everything changes to strengthen government, but it doesn't do anything to give power back to we the people.
No, once you give up any right or any power to government, you will never see it come back. Name me one right that has been returned to the people that government has taken away.
Well, as Benjamin Franklin said, those who give up their freedoms for what they believe are temporary securities deserve neither freedom nor security. And that's very true, Annie. I certainly can't think of anything that we've gotten back from the government. Not even how about money?
don't get me started on money, because everyone turns around and they think, oh, I'm getting a tax refund. No, you're not. You're having money returned to you that you already paid government. That's not a refund. That is your money to begin with.
It certainly is. I mean, it's not just your money, but Annie, it's almost like we are thankful, whether or not a stimulus or whatever. Oh, wow, isn't this wonderful? You know, why do we have to beg money-obsessed politicians to get back our whole hard-earned money? Think about this. Before we have put food on the table, before we've put a roof over our head, before we've put clothing on the back of our children or meals at our table or whatever, we pay the government. I mean, that's a travesty.
No.
Oh, my God.
Government that should be paid last. We should take care of our own needs first and government last. And
well,
you do
absolutely.
That, you won't have anyone on welfare. Because you know why? They'd have to be out there working for their own hard-earned money.
Well, and the bottom line is we need to starve government. We need to absolutely starve them. And what that does is once we have just – once we the people can kind of do that, then we force their hand. And we force their hand in a way where they're going to bite back. And once they bite back, if there's a mass group of people that are just overwhelming, then government will lose, period. But unless there is, then we do. It's no different than you get a ticket, whether it's a local whatever your ticket is for, whether it's a local ticket from a police officer or whatever it may be. Even if you're innocent, your chances of winning an appeal on that are almost zero, because who are you going to? You're going to a magistrate whose paycheck comes from where? It comes from you paying that fine. So, I mean, the bottom line is that we need to restructure everything in a way that really makes it difficult for government to succeed over the people, to whereas now it's just very simple. I mean, government is just it's metastasized into such corruption that at every level, whether it's your local, your county, your state, and in the Chicago area, you know, usually you have your city government, then your county government, then your state government. In between that layer, Chicago now has a metro, or not Chicago, I think it's Illinois. I don't know, but either way, they have a metro government. So they've got an extra layer of bureaucracy to still get nothing done.
And Chicago is a hotbed of corrupt politics, if there ever was. Hey, was there a sentencing yet? Have you heard yet on Blagojevich?
No, I have not.
He was supposed to be sentenced today. Talk about corrupt. He's going to join the governor's club in prison.
Well, of course, it was a big story until our dear friend with, you know, the dozen-plus kids all of a sudden captured the heart of every American. so maybe that's why we missed it on television today. But, I mean, oh, my God.
Oh, by the way, we have to give a shout-out to one of your friends, Alexis. She's up there in East Grand Rapids. She went on the Facebook page a while back, and I said every now and then I'm going to give a shout-out to Alexis.
Yeah, I miss being in Grand Rapids. I was, oh, man. East Grand Rapids is a really nice area. She's got a really nice eye. You know, I met her. Her and her friends had these fake IDs. This really funny story is that certain generations just think people are just so dumb. So her and her friends send us IDs. You know, you need CID in order to get in the club. She's got a friend, just the most petite, cute little thing ever on the planet. Girl could probably be a model in a centerfold. She's so cute. She hands me the ID of, like, a 35-year-old Negro woman. Thinking to myself, what? I mean, do you really think I'm not at least going to glimpse at the picture? So I hand this to the person next to me, and he says, don't even bother to ask the date of birth. She probably doesn't even know.
Talk about wacky things that have come up on the news. And this is something I wanted to bring up with Tim Barton, because I know he would have gone nuts on this. The new Senate appropriations bill for defense, the defense authorization bill, that just passed the Senate, 93-7. There is a section in there, and it reverses Article 125 of the Universal of the UCMJ, you know, the Military Code of Justice, which makes it illegal to engage in both sodomy with humans and sex with animals. It absolutely overturns that. So now in the military, you can commit sodomy and you can have, you know, a bestiality act. You can have sex with animals according to the Military Code of Justice. They overturned it in a appropriations bill.
How did that even become – wait a minute. Oh, my God. How did something like that even get into a bill?
I don't know of a single state that makes it legal, bestiality legal. Does anyone know of a state, any state that has bestiality that is legal?
What is bestiality?
Huh?
What is it?
It's just an animal.
Oh, okay. I mean –
but this got into the defense authorization bill, and it includes a provision that not only repeals the military law on sodomy, it also repeals the military ban on sex with animals, or known as bestiality. This is the same bill that approved the military detention of U.S. citizens indefinitely. Now, if you're a U.S. citizen and you commit what is deemed an act of terror, it doesn't have to be Islamic terror, it's just any act of terror, you can find your butt in Gitmo indefinitely. Now, can you imagine how they can use that to go after Tea Party people? Oh, you mean those silver-haired people out there carrying patriotic signs and singing patriotic songs? It's a terrorist act. We've got to lock them all up.
Well, of course.
Think about that.
Well, of course, and that's going to happen slowly but surely. Just recently, I mean, this is the poison of the media. I was driving home, I think it was yesterday, where they arrested a person, I think it's a father or something, for suspicion or whatever, and the guy in the media says, today, John Doe was arrested. Police believe he's lying regarding the death of so-and-so. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, police believe he's lying? The hell does that mean? They've just poisoned that person. I mean, that's a perfect example of how if you or I get arrested, Brian Williams and all these people will be reporting, well, Annie Ubelis has been a known anti-American. And you know, next thing you know, outside of the people who know you, the whole world thinks you're, the Adolf Hitler's second coming. And
well,
this is horrible. This is government in its finest hour. And in many, many ways, we need to hold the politicians who push for these accountable. And by death, if you really think about it, in constitutional law in the 1700s, treason was absolutely administered immediately. That constitution stood, and that's what it was, period.
Exactly.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Now, if a U.S. citizen commits an act of treason, you know, how about a treason of terror, a terrorist act? I want to know how they're going to define it a terror act. You have Timothy McVeigh. He's a U.S. citizen. He committed a crime against U.S. citizens. He was a bomber, okay? There was no massive conspiracy behind it. It was him and his buddy, and they committed a hard act. Now, would you name him a terrorist and put him in Gitmo and not allow him a trial?
Well,
this is what the law says.
Well, here's another thing too, Annie, is that, okay, I mean, we know it was Timothy McVeigh because obviously he acknowledged it. We still don't know who John Doe 2 and 3 was. It could have been Terry Nichols, could not have been. But there's no John Doe 3. Was that Muhammad Atta? Everything gets spun. The media spins it in such a way to where we're overlooking an awful lot. Okay, today Cool Mike was arrested with GGT and Annie Ubelis. The gang of three has been known to, and then they just go on and on, to poison people.
Known to have right wing rants, say that three times fast, on BTR. That's going to make us a terrorist.
You know, and then they'll play one of our clips where we misspoke or we said something maybe that didn't come out right. Or you know, maybe we're upset when we said something we really didn't mean. I mean, and then people will be like, oh, my God, can you believe that Cool Mike? Kill him, hang him, fry him. You know, I mean, that's exactly it. And, of course, we have so many great friends on BTR. One of them get under the mic, too, and say, and you know what he said one time? They ought to kill every single one of them. And they're like, man, glad the government got this guy in custody. It's like, oh, my God, it's just never ending. The government individually, and it will change under administrations, will define what a terror or an enemy combatant or whatever is. And it's basically defined by those who really can't defend themselves.
Also by the opinion of the media. What the media says is going to affect how your jury pool and everyone else will treat you.
Yep.
And that's an unfortunate truth. So.
Yep.
Now you have it where any American citizen can now be arrested for terrorism.
Yep.
And it's all going to be based upon the viewpoint of whoever is making that arrest and prosecuting you. And then you can turn around, put your head between your legs, and plant a kiss where the sun don't shine, because that's the last time you're going to be able to see it.
Yep, that's for sure. That's for sure. Speaking of that, I got the popos pulling in our parking lot now, Annie, so I got to bounce. So... Have a good afternoon. I got to see what they want now.
Okay.
You deal with the cops. You meet them at the door. You don't let them in. Hey, we'll see you.
Bye. That was my co-host, Cool Mike. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. I had extended the show a little bit extra, hoping that Mr. Barton would be able to stay on, but as things happen, it's a normal snafu. Want to welcome everyone into the chat room. We've been having a lot of fun in there. I got Michael Bonner, who's got his show going on tonight. Check him out. I got Tesler, Socialism is Not an Option, another excellent show. You've got The Invisible Conservative. He's got a fantastic show, too. And I want to say hi to Vorp. Vorp, if you got a show, put it up inside the chat room. Put a link on that. Another item I came across in the news, and this is bound to get some blood boiling on this one. Newt Gingrich kind of made a little bit of a controversial statement to ABC correspondent Jake Tupper the other day. And he made a statement basically that when a woman has a fertilized egg and that's been successfully implanted, now you're dealing with life. And essentially, he was saying that that fertilized embryo is not a life until it's implanted in the woman, successful implantment. And that has a lot of pro-lifers up in arms, because when he makes a statement like that, people that agree with the morning after pill feel that it's supporting their cause. So Gingrich then eventually, through one of his spokesmen, took a backpedal on that one. Distributors of the morning after pill have used the argument that Gingrich advanced in his television interview that life only begins with implantation to justify the claim that the pill is not an abortion. And proponents of embryonic stem cell research have used the same logic to justify the destruction of fertilized embryos. Now, he has told ABC Tupper that he firmly opposed embryonic stem cell research, but he also said, you're going to open up an extraordinary range of new difficult questions. So Gingrich kind of like stepped on it a little bit here, but through his public relations, he made a statement that, as I have stated many times throughout the course of my public life, I believe that human life begins at conception. So he backpedaled from that. And he said, my convictions on human life are longstanding, deeply felt, and matters of conscience. I will do all my power always to foster reverence for life. And then he further goes on to say, as I have also made clear in several of my public pronouncements throughout the campaign, I oppose federal funding of any research that destroys human embryo, because we are also dealing here with human life. So there's one oops, Newt. That's one big oops there. And that brings me around to Representative Trent Franks, who has come up with a bill to outlaw abortion motivated by either race or gender. And think about this. 60% of the abortions are performed in the United States are on females of black heritage, black Americans, whatever you want to say. But black females account for 60% of the abortions in the United States, but they are only 18% of the population. So this makes a lot of sense to me. If you have someone, and this is something now, they have these designer babies. Couples go in and they want a blue-eyed, blonde-haired baby. They want it to be a boy. Well, what happens? They go through the whole process, you know, fertilization, whatever, whether they do it through, artificial, or if they do it through natural. And they find out it's not a boy, it's a girl. And that's what's happening. They have these designer babies. If it doesn't fit their criteria, they go ahead and have the child aborted. The same thing now with black females. They're encouraged to have these abortions. Now, I do not agree with the opposite end of the spectrum with this woman who had 15 kids. That's complete irresponsibility. But
It is a human life. It is a human life. So I completely support this bill that Representative Trent Franks is proposing. He's a Republican, and I don't know what state he is from, but I agree. It should not be motivated by race or gender, and that is what is happening today. And right now, the United States repopulation is at 2.4%. That is the lowest it can be unless we want to see a decline in our population. In order to stay a healthy, viable country, we have to have 2.4% repopulation or better. And by supporting these Planned Parenthoods and all these other things is not going to keep us a healthy, viable nation. But then again, isn't that what the progressives want to do, is destroy us as a nation? And they can do it through programs such as this. So I would get a hold of your representatives and definitely support Representative Trent Frank's bill. And Tesla put up his link to his website. I think I did mention, Tesla, your site up there. Socialism is not an option. You've got an excellent weekend show. You have been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank everyone that has come in. I am going to end it just 15 minutes early. I did go over my normal show time. I want to thank everyone for stopping in and listening to our guest. You can listen to it in the archive later on if you missed the first half. But in the interim, before I sign off, we got one last caller. And good afternoon, Thomas. Welcome back again.
Hi, my favorite Annie.
Hi. Do you have news for us?
I do have some news, but I cannot share it. That's But it's some good things pertaining to our favorite candidate.
Well, I have been hearing little whisperings that Herman Cain may not be completely out of the race and something may be happening very soon.
Bingo. Okay, so you're on the up and up and up and up too. That's exactly what's going on. There are some things that's going on behind the scenes that people don't realize. And it's, and you know, the whole sad thing about it is that those who abandoned ship before they really knew what was going on, they're going to be kicking themselves.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be kicking themselves.
There is a possibility Herman Cain can have a chance, may have a dog in this fight, but he's not going to be at the debate in Iowa, is he?
We don't know. His campaign office is actually, it's still there, but there were some other things that I've found out why they have to move out and why some things that were said was said, because there's going to be some interesting information coming out, and if it's what I think it is, it's going to shatter the liberals' mystique, if you will. And I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, so in other words, they may have found the source behind all these accusations, and it's not coming from the Republican side?
It never was coming from the Republican side.
Well, there had been some rumors that it was coming from some of the other candidates, from their staffers. And I had heard a couple of that. There was also traced back to a couple of Republican movers and shakers that were active under George W. Bush. But I think it's going to end up finally right smack in the Obama camp.
Yep. Yep.
And I can say it probably will. Let me hazard a guess that it's going to go to Chicago. And you will find the dirty trio. You're going to find David Axelrod, David Plouffe, and Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. Yeah.
You wouldn't put it too far from those three.
I would not put it too far from those three. And I do have it on good authority that what Herman Cain announced on Saturday was not his original announcement.
No, because he was supposed to be opening up his Atlanta headquarters there.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so what folks are going to find out about this man is that don't push the wrong buttons with him. And also what they have done in this action, they have poked a sleeping bear for too long. Conservatives, black conservatives, conservatives across the spectrum, and what's happening, Annie, those who were really just kind of, they're being weeded out. Because if you really believed in a person, like you said you did, you wouldn't abandon ship on the basis of an allegation when there's no truth. And that's what a lot of Herman Cain supporters did, which breaks my heart.
Well,
so
the fact that there was a lot of, it wasn't just one person, that's what caused a lot of the stir. But when you start looking at the actual background of these individuals, you say, can you get anyone shadier?
Exactly.
Can you honestly get anyone that's more shadier than these three?
Right. And Gloria Allred and Sharon Bielik thought that they were coming out with an endorsement Monday of somebody, and so they had prepared a counter news conference, and when there wasn't any endorsement, she was made to look like a fool. They both were. So,
wow. Well,
so
that's really, really interesting.
Yep.
So this race is going to get more interesting and more curiouser, and curiouser. Feels like you're like Alice in Wonderland. You just fell down the rabbit hole.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I can't wait. I can't wait to get on to my network because, you know what, there's going to be a lot more freedom to say, you know, a lot more things, you know, without the trolls and all that stuff, be a lot more, you know, protection for the host and stuff. But, you know, I digress. Oh, did I tell you that I also am going to have my own television channel?
No. No, that's interesting. That is interesting.
I guess I've been holding back a lot of things, but yeah, there's a lot of movers and shakers, or moving and shaking, I should say, that's taking place with, you know, with everything that we talked about. I've shared the name that you gave me with a few people, and they absolutely love it. They agree with the that it should be all encompassing and not just a name where people would think, oh, it's just for one particular group of people. So, I mean, everybody loves it. Pastor C.L. Bryant loves the name. Oh, I think I did tell you that he's on my board of directors, right? Did I tell you that?
No.
What have I told you? I guess I haven't been telling you much of nothing, have I? I'm bad.
Well, why don't you fill in people about what you're talking about, that you're starting to branch out into your own media?
Yes, I am starting my own media network called Cafe Media Group, and there's two parts to it. There will be a conservative internet radio network, and there's actually going to be a subscription television network through Big Voices Media. And I'll tell you guys a little bit more about that part of it later. But my network, I have made the decision, just based on a lot of things that's been happening to my show, to a lot of other conservative shows, is that I'm tired of giving BTR money for crappy technological service, you know. And so I decided that I want something for conservatives that's going to give them a forum and a voice to listen to shows. And not only that, because I'm a Christian, it's also going to have 24-hour, you know, when the shows are not on, there will be 24-hour Christian music where people can listen to music, unlike BTR. And, you know, BTR gave me a good avenue to voice my opinion on things, but the technology, it's lacking, if you will. And the only way you can get quality service, if you're paying thousands of dollars for the branded network and that sort of thing, and I decided, you know what? They need a little competition, so that's what's coming.
Well, we look forward to your launching of that. When do you expect to have it up and launched?
Well, I just got off the phone when I had to leave today. I was talking to a friend of mine who I'm a part of something with, and she is going to be talking to a group that's going to possibly give the money to get the network infrastructure started. And so I'm hoping that that conversation tonight goes successfully. And then if it does, I can get the servers and get the computer infrastructure built. And hopefully mid-January, my show is going to be the first show on there, obviously. And then I'm hoping to bring over good quality hosts from all over the country and, you know, hint, hint, hint.
Well, Thomas, I want to wish you a lot of luck on that. I'm going to be closing out the show. Thank you for calling in, and I'll be talking to you later on, okay?
Yes, ma'am. You have a good night.
Okay.
Good day.
Thanks. And you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Bellis, and what we're going to have coming up on Friday is John Dummett, D-U-M-M-E-T-T. He is running, believe it or not, a little-known candidate for president. And we want to bring some of these little-known guys up. He's a conservative, and he's I'm trying to see where he's from.
Kansas.
Oh, right. Thank you. He is from Kansas. He's a representative from Kansas, and he is on the ticket for the 2012 presidential race. You can find him up there if you pull up a list of all the candidates. And he's going to be on the show. He is currently in Arizona talking to Sheriff Joe, and he's going to be coming in on Friday after he's had his meeting with Sheriff Joe. So it should be very, very interesting. So join us Friday and listen to Representative John Dummett and his presidential campaign. You know, there's a little couple more wrenches to throw into the mix here. Ooh, want to welcome NYPD Stomp and Drag. Interesting. And we are going to say goodnight and join us again on Friday when we will be back here with Representative John Dummett and his presidential race. Until then, have a very happy and safe week, and Merry Christmas.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Look me straight in the eye. Tell me. me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.